This is a weekend when we recognize Martin Luther King. Certainly, King should be remembered not only on one weekend in the year, but all through the year. But I also want to invite you to hold him up today and on this weekend. I hope you take some time today or tomorrow to honor him. All Americans, and especially Americans of free faith, ought to thank King for his work for justice, and how he has influenced us and continues to influence us to this day, nearly 40 years after his death. King represents that combination of theology and political action that inspires us to this day. I should tell you that I just returned from Meadville Lombard Seminary, where I took a course this past week with the Reverend Richard Gilbert, who I know is a friend to this congregation. Some of you may have worked with Richard Gilbert last year when he was visiting here. And this course was on social justice. And the grounding of Gilbert's work comes directly out of King's work, that our work in the world is not an option. It is an imperative. It is a prophetic imperative that we, from our religious voices, work for justice in the world. So I invite you to get out your imperatives and join New Hampshire Faithful Democracy or whatever other group it is that will give you a chance to take your free voice into the world. Martin Luther King had various connections with Unitarian Universalists. Some folks say he considered becoming a UU, but I've actually never seen documentation specifically to that effect. But he was the Ware Lecturer at General Assembly in 1966, the annual gathering of Unitarian Universalists. And it was at King's March on Selma, Alabama in 1965 when the Unitarian Universalist minister James Reed was killed. King had great respect for this free faith movement. In turn, we should honor and respect his words and his life and their impact on our views of justice. There's certainly much that we could draw upon from King's writings. The passage that speaks new to me every time I read it is from his letter from Birmingham Jail, and it's that passage I would like to refer to this morning. King wrote this letter longhand from jail after taking part in a nonviolent demonstration against segregation during the time that he was president of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. King was living in Atlanta, Georgia at the time, but he went to Birmingham to protest segregation. He had to be there in Birmingham, he said, because he wanted to carry the gospel of freedom beyond his hometown. He had to help his black brothers and sisters because he believed we are all connected. In that letter from jail, then, these are some of the powerful words he wrote. And I'm sure they resonate with many of you. We are caught in an inescapable network of mutuality, tied in a single garment of destiny. Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. Whatever affects one directly affects all indirectly. I can never be what I ought to be until you are what you ought to be. And you can never be what you ought to be until I am what I ought to be. Profound words from Birmingham Jail. Now, at the time, King was primarily addressing injustice through the lens of skin color. However, his message about injustice is applicable to many areas of oppression that existed then in the 1960s and continue to exist here in the 21st century. There's some irony, it seems, isn't it? The world, in some ways, is growing more pluralistic, more diverse. But in other ways, we seem to be becoming increasingly suspicious of those who are not like us, whom we tend to label as the other, perhaps out of fear probably unlikely, but we're suspicious. Even in our liberal faith movement, we are working mightily to become the diversity we promote. But we remain rather singular in demographic profile. Through King's words from Birmingham in the early 60s, perhaps our world and our faith movement today can find some inspiration for moving to the diversity we want to be. So what I'd like to invite you to do is unpack with me a little bit more King's words. First of all, he reminds us that all humans are networked, that we have some relationship to one another. We're linked. Now, King was referring specifically to the network of humanity. But these days, especially with our increased knowledge of global warming, I think that network almost always in everybody's thoughts also extends to ecological networking, that we are also networked to planet Earth. And it's not only one network that we're in, but each of us is part of multiple networks that are subsets, if you will, of a global network of all life, and a global network of our planet. King also said this networking is inescapable. Simply by virtue of being alive, we are in a network. That is what life is about. The network is what sustains us. So anything that's alive can't help but be part of this connection to life. And then what enriches these relationships in these networks is their mutuality. I depend on you, and you depend on me, and we both depend on every other link in the network. We are all different components of the network, but none is superior to the other in the sense that each link in this chain is worthy of respect. We're mutually dependent on one another, so that when one part of the chain confronts injustice, all parts are threatened. This means that our network as humans and our network as a religious movement is only as strong as its weakest links. Linked as we are then, we are called to exercise not just tolerance for the other parts of the network, but respect for those parts. Being linked, we are called to find the inherent worth and dignity in all other parts of the network. Being linked, we are called to find love. The network breaks down, however. We humans tend to be given to categorical thinking. We place things into known categories. It helps us identify what the other is. Now, categorical thinking isn't inherently bad. We understand people and all of life through their common characteristics. Think about all the categories we have in life. We categorize by gender, by skin color, by body size, by sexual orientation, by physical conditions, by where people come from, by the kind of car they drive, or the kind of shoes they wear. It helps us sort out the world. But where we start to get into trouble with categories is when we use them to predict how others will act based on expectations about the categories. In other words, we relate to others through the categories, and especially when their categories are not like us, we relate through the category and not through the person herself or himself. We miss the target for seeing others for who they are in their totality because we see the category. Or said theologically, we miss having an I-thou relationship with others, to quote the theologian Martin Buber. Instead, when we treat others as categories, our relationship becomes more of an I, it. We see the category and not the person. I, it tends to have less compassion in the relationship than I, thou. We refer, for example, to another black man, but we fail to also identify him as a tall man, or a young man, or a father, or an artist. Or we note that someone is a lesbian daughter, but we also do not call her a young daughter, or a blonde daughter, or a right-handed daughter. We tend to see categories. And then not only do we single people out for those categories, but often we come to judge those categories as being less than I am, or less than we are, less than some standard that we establish for what we think others should be like. Such preconceived, prejudging prejudice is usually based on some groundless fears or suspicions or misunderstandings. But such prejudging leads to marginalization. And if there's enough marginalization, eventually to oppression of another group. So give yourself a test, my friends. Silent test. No grades will be given afterwards. Ask yourself, have you ever prejudged someone else based on external characteristics? Yes, you. Who might consider yourself to be free and liberal and open and welcoming and respecting. Have you ever felt fear of other persons because of skin color? Or have you ever made assumptions about skills in math or science based on gender? Or have you ever passed judgment about intelligence based on body size or body build? Could you respond to our response of greeting, to say that it will not matter what these external characteristics are as you relate to others. The more we can interact directly with persons who we label as the other, the more we can experience them in I-thou relationships. I'm really pleased that my two children had a chance to grow up in elementary and high schools in both Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and Austin, Texas, where we last lived, where they had exposure to a diversity of other students, a diversity of skin colors, a diversity of classes, a diversity of family situations. They had that experience, that lived experience of relating to the other at more than a categorical level, at the I, that, thou level. And I'm proud to say both of my children, now today early adults, I think, I hope, in their early 20s, although they may still be teenagers for quite a while. Today they treat everyone with respect and not according to preconceived notions of categories. I'm so glad they've had that experience. And if anything, my daughter, who is now up here in Massachusetts in college, is noticing less diversity of culture than in the South, and she's actually missing it a bit. It's a little bit more homogenous than she's used to, and she welcomes having that. So if all of life is mutually connected, as King believed, then marginalization of any one component means marginalization of the whole network. Categorizing a person for one quality, it also becomes very easy to judge that same person for other qualities. The more someone does not look like us, the more layers of marginalization a person can live under and experience. Martin Luther King's work for justice was first and foremost about race, but certainly he knew full well that race was inextricably linked to class. People of color tend to be poorer than people with white or pink skin. At one level, then, the patterns of oppression are generic. That is, there's some common dynamic driving oppression, a dynamic that's grounded in the desire to have some sort of order in our world and some sort of privilege and power over others. I tend to be suspicious when I hear that someone is a strong advocate for one area of oppression, but I know that in another corner of life, that person claims privilege and power over others. The tendency toward oppression is generic in the sense that it is a pattern of wanting power. It's hard to understand how one can support one area of oppression and not another. We are all linked, and our tendency toward that categorization is linked. So our world is working, and working hard, for diversity and for overcoming oppression and marginalization. It certainly is a global issue right now, isn't it? Throughout the world these days, people are searching for ways to get along in the world. We're becoming increasingly pluralistic, but increasingly tolerant, intolerant, it seems, at least suspicious. Some of that suspicion revolves around religious categories. Religious categories divide us. They call us to discriminatory thinking, and that's sad. It's no longer even just the Protestants versus the Catholics, or the Christians versus the Jews. Now it's the Shiites versus the Sunnis. And since 9/11, the whole world, it seems, against the Muslims, or what we think are the Muslims. Add to that oppression that's based on race or on class, oppressions that are devastating the whole world in areas such as Rwanda or Darfur or the Middle East or Sierra Leone, and we realize all the more how much our world truly is in need of respect for diversity, respect for that I-thou relationship. It's hard work finding respect for diversity. King's words can inspire the whole world to find community. But I think also we in this free faith movement are also called to the hard work of diversity and respect for diversity. Isn't respect for multiple paths the core of our theological views? And aren't Unitarian Universalists known for taking strong stands against issues such as marriage equality? I'm proud to be part of a faith tradition that has a track record. However, I also call on this movement to carefully examine other areas of our mutual network and ask how we can continue to be all the more respectful of marginalized groups. We may have strong ideas about support for marginalized groups, but the membership in this religious organization and movement continues to be a relatively privileged group of people, privileged by education, privileged by class, privileged by race, in some cases privileged by gender. While we are collectively getting better at understanding a wider range of experiences, we still have much work to do, my friends, to understand the range of experiences in life. I understand that some of our Unitarian Universalist youth groups are intentionally engaged in urban retreats, they're calling them. That is, for gatherings and for retreats, rather than going into idyllic situations out in the forests and the countryside, they are going into inner cities to experience what life is like in an inner city. Or there's a group in San Francisco called the Urban Fools, who offer diversity training on the streets of San Francisco, where one lives for several days on the streets of San Francisco with just a few dollars in your pocket. These experiences are calling us to yet greater understanding of the range of experiences in life, but they're still not enough. We can still return to our comfortable middle-class homes when the experiences are over. So what more can we really do to expand contact with all of life? Well, for one, I call us to work at that I-thou experience with everyone. Let us practice getting used to seeing others not as categories, but as individuals. As a free faith movement, our strongest network is only as strong as our weakest links. So we diminish the effectiveness of our work if we are out of I-thou relationships with some pieces of our system. For another, I believe our faith movement can find inspiration by drawing on our grounding. We are grounded in the notion of covenant. That is, the notion of promises we make to one another. We have been, since the 17th century, since 1637, when 30 families in Dedham, Massachusetts, developed the first covenant that eventually led to a Unitarian congregation. They made promises to one another, and it is those promises that ground our movement together. Our covenant is based on agreeing to mutuality, agreeing to support one another. Even if we don't agree to the substance, we agree to the support within our congregations and from one congregation to another. Our covenant calls us to be in community with one another. This is the grounding of this faith since the 17th century. I call us to know about the covenant. In particular, check out the work of Alice Lair Wesley, for example. She calls us to know the history of the covenant of free faith. If we do, if we remember our covenant, we then get to what grounds us. That is the love, the capacity to be in I-thou relationships with others in our movement and with others in the world. I hope Martin Luther King reminds us that we can't avoid connections with life on this planet. These connections are inescapable. As the world metaphorically becomes smaller and smaller, it becomes more and more important to build I-thou relationships. The more we can do this, the more we can connect authentically with others. And the more that we can go beyond seeing one another as categories of race or gender or class or physical capabilities, we can go beyond the proclivity to discriminate. Self-awareness is the key to ending discriminating habits. Our covenant indeed calls us together as people of free faith, as participants on this planet Earth. Our covenant calls us to truly examine how we relate to one another. Our covenant calls us to go beyond tolerating and tokenizing to genuine respect for that which is different. On this weekend, then, let us remember the life of Martin Luther King and how his words can inspire us to move from fear to hope for the world and for ourselves.